As many of you know, the Klan started out in a very dismal period of our history. And though I am not a Southerner by birth, I am from Detroit, Michigan, my heart goes out to the Southern people of that period of time in our history. I have here in front of me a picture of the Louisiana government in 1868. The picture of the government there, which was typical of all Southern states, was black. The Southern people were subjected to Negro control and domination and had the bayonets the Northern troops shoved deep into their ribs. They were completely oppressed and were forced to accept Negro dictatorship, and their very lives and the lives of their children were at the mercy of the newly founded Southern Negro government. It was not a very happy affair. It was horrible. It was dismal. It was a nightmare. And recently I referred to it as a bad dream, but it was more than that. It was a horrible, horrible nightmare that the Southern people were forced to endure. And endure they did until some wise men, inspired, no doubt, by God, and perhaps called, like the prophet Moses was called, to lead God's people out of Egypt. They were called to lead the Southern people out of the chaos. And at Pulaski, Tennessee, they were inspired to form what we today call the Ku Klux Klan. The word Ku Klux comes from the Greek word kuklos, which means circle or band, a circle unifying our race and people throughout our destiny and throughout our past. And so they formed the Ku Klux and added the word Klan, to which became known as the Ku Klux Klan. And so there they were, faced with this terrible nightmare. A few men gathered together and founded the Klan, and then and there, they came to recognize that, and to understand with proper understanding, and had the proper attitude toward the problem. They understood the problem completely and clearly, in other words. Just having an organization spring forth called the Ku Klux Klan was not the answer. And any name could have no doubt have been used. It was not in the name, it was in the attitude. It was not in the name, it was in the goal that they projected. It was not in the name, it was in the ideals that they stood for. So when we stand here today, let's recognize the Klan is not a magic word that will bring us victory. What we have to have in our hearts is the right attitude. We have to recognize the problem. We have to have a proper mental attitude toward the problem and intelligent solutions on how to solve those problems. The Ku Klux Klan is not a magical wand that you can just wave and the enemy is going to run in fear. These men who formed the Klan had to recognize the source of their problems. Where did the problems originate? Now I know we have all been told by the news media that the Klan just went about hanging Negroes, but the Klan recognized that Negroes were not the problem, not really. We know that there is no such thing as black power in our time or in their time. We are not faced with black power today. What we are faced with is white weakness. Our people are weak. If our people were strong, then Negroes would have no power in our country. If our people were strong, we would not be ruled over by the November criminals. Weak men are ruled over by oppressors. Strong men and women are ruled over by no one. Today we are being ruled over because our people have become weak. The men who founded the Klan were educated men, men of professions, doctors, lawyers, men of means, and they recognized the problem was not Negroes. The problem was the oppression of the federal government. They were the ones who executed the power. They are the ones who execute the terror. They are the ones that threaten the Southern people. Likewise today, contrary to what many people may think, Negroes are not our problem. The problem is the November criminals who rule in Washington, D.C. The November criminals have forfeited their right to rule over us. The Klan in 1860s recognized that the goal was to drive federal troops out of the south. In Isaiah 1, verse 7, it says, "Your country is desolate. Your cities are burned with fire. Your land, strangers devour it in your presence. And it is desolate as overthrown by strangers." Now the prophet Isaiah was looking at the problem of his nation. His nation being Israel, which I personally believe were our ancestors. And while this is not necessarily official clan teaching, I find it personally interesting that only the white race fulfills all the prophecies that the Bible gives about the people of Israel. But let me continue. As Isaiah gives this account of the land of Israel under the oppression of alien rule, we see that our own country today looks as an example like ancient Israel. Let's look at it in our day. Today our land is desolate, and the heathen rebel against white rule. They set our cities afire. They are not safe. Whole sections of every major city are not safe to walk in. Today our land is ruled over by strangers, and it seems that we have no power to solve the problem. The South in 1860 had the same problem. Its countryside was desolate. Its cities were burned. Federal troops burned Atlanta and many cities and crops throughout the South. Strangers were sleeping in their beds, raping the women, harassing the children. It was a nightmare upon the South. And as I said, six men at Pulaski, Tennessee took the challenge and mustered the courage that God puts into the hearts of men. And they decided that it was time to redeem their country. But in 1915, something terrible was happening again in the South. The South had been redeemed. The Klan fulfilled its mission. But in 1915, once again, something was happening in America. Something was happening in our nation. After the Klan fulfilled its glorious history and its glorious destiny in the 1860s, redeemed the South, drove federal troops north, redeemed not just the South, but the people of the South. In 1915, the problem was looming again over the nation. Something again was terribly wrong. The immigration laws had been lifted, and Eastern European Jews and other non-whites were coming in. So in 1915, Colonel William Simmons ascended to the top of Stone Mountain, Georgia, which is the largest solid piece of granite in the world. In fact, it's considered the eighth wonder of the world. And Colonel Simmons and the others marched to the top of Stone Mountain and lit the fires against tyranny once again with a cross lighting that could be seen for miles around. I'm going to refresh your memory just in case a few of you have forgotten. We do not burn the cross, but rather we light the cross as a symbol against tyranny. The light of Christ shines, dispelling darkness and evil. It's the light of the world. The clans in ancient Scotland used the lit cross to summon the people to rise up in defiance against evil and defiance against wrongdoing. Today, many churches still use the lighted cross as part of its symbolism. Look at any Methodist church, and their national logo is a cross in flame and fire. The same as Presbyterian Church. Their national logo is a cross with four flames at the base of the cross. Fire has long been associated with Christianity. Some people may say that it is treason to speak out against Washington, D.C. But we are not opposed to the Constitution of our republic form of government. Our forefathers built the greatest government on earth, and we are very proud of that accomplishment. But what we are opposed to are those who have captured Washington, D.C., and are supposed to represent the children of the founders of this nation, but do not. The politicians in Washington, D.C. do not support the interests of white people, and it is this that we speak out against. The politicians no longer seek to support you. The Declaration of Independence says that we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. And it goes on further to say that whenever a form of government becomes destructive of these ends, that is the rights of the people, it is then the right and the duty of the people to alter or abolish it and institute new government. Ladies and gentlemen, according to the Declaration, the government rules by the consent of the people. Bear in mind, it is not the Negro on the street corner that has robbed you of your income through higher and higher taxes, who exercise terror over people to the IRS. It is the politicians who are now controlling Washington, D.C. It is the November criminals. Who is it that is refusing to close our southern borders? It's the politicians who now control Washington, D.C. Who is it that sends a third of all foreign aid to the bandit state of Israel? Who is it that sends your children to schools where they can be indoctrinated with the homosexual agenda? Who is it that says your children can't practice Christianity in school? It is once again not the Negro on the street corner, but the politicians who now control Washington, D.C., the November criminals. It is the federal government that is pushing non-whites into our lives, robbing us of our substance, destroying the future of our children, destroying our liberties, and destroying all that we as a people love and hold dear. The non-whites would have no control over us if it were not for the federal government. But we have to recognize that the same problem we face today is the same problem that the early Klan faced. The politicians who now control the federal government, they are the ones who stand as an enemy to our people. So we have to have a positive mental attitude. Let me read a verse from the Bible. It's found in 1 Samuel chapter 14. And let me give you a little background. King Saul, who was the king at the time, was down at Gibeah, according to the scriptures. And he had about 600 men with him. They didn't have any swords. You see, they were under sword control. I stopped and paused there for a minute because people may say, what do you mean, sword control? Well, you know that in ancient Israel, at least once or twice, conquering nations abolished smelters, which prevented them from making spears and swords. So they literally had a sword control. But anyway, King Saul was unprepared and fearful of the Philistines, who were a non-white people. He formed on another hilltop, rather upon another hilltop was the army of the Philistines, high above King Saul. They were threatening the lives of our people, our ancient ancestors. They were threatened by the weapons of the Philistines and by their might, and King Saul was fearful, and all of Israel was fearful. America today is standing in fear of the federal government, who bow at the demands of minorities. Of course, we know they aren't the minority. The white race is only about 11% of the world's population. We are the true global minority. It is our race that is threatened, not theirs. So there they were, our people, led by King Saul, and they were very, very afraid. But there happened to be there a man of God, a man of vision. He recognized the problem, but there was more than recognizing the problem, because just knowing the problem is not enough. A lot of people know there is a problem in America today. They stay to themselves, not willing to help out. I recall as a youngster growing up, I would hear the older folks say, the trouble with white people is they don't stick together. And so it is today. A lot of people know the problem, but they don't stick together. They don't work for a solution. A lot of people know the federal government is taking us to hell. But it's not enough just knowing what the problem is. You need something else. You need what a lot of people will call PMA. You have to have a positive mental attitude in the face of the problem. You have to recognize the problem. But then you also have to believe that you can do something about it. Something to make a difference. There's a saying that I had learned years ago when I was a member of the John Birch Society. I believe it went something like this. I am only one, but still I am one. I can't do everything, but I can do something. And by God, I will not fail to do that one thing that I can do. And so it is upon us today. In face of this problem, what is it that we can do? What is it that you can do? Now back to the scripture there, King Saul. There was a man named Jonathan. And Jonathan was a son of King Saul. And I don't know if he ever heard of that saying before. I'm sure he hasn't. Positive mental attitude, But there he was, the son of the king Saul, and the scripture says, quote, and Jonathan said to the young man that bare his armor. Now Jonathan was the only one that had a sword in the camp. And he said to the young man, let us go to the other side, and maybe that the Lord will work a miracle for us, for there is no restraint of the Lord to deliver by many or by few. In other words, it doesn't take a whole lot. When God is on your side. You've all heard the saying, God in one is the majority. That is what Jonathan was saying. God doesn't need a whole multitude. He can save by just a few. And his armor bearer said unto him, do all that is in thine heart. Behold, I am with thee according to thy heart. Whatever you do, I am with you, Jonathan. His armor bearer said, whatever you do, I am with you. Now, as I said, Jonathan had a positive mental attitude. And then said Jonathan, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go over there and discover ourselves to them, or show ourselves to them. They're going to go over there and let the enemy see them. If they should say to us, if the enemy should say to us, tarry until we come unto you, in other words, you just wait right there, then we will wait and stand here in our place. We're not going to run. We will stay right here and let them come to us. We will not go after them. But should they say, come up to us, then we will go up. Because it makes no difference whether we go up or they come down. The Lord has delivered them into our hands. Jonathan had some guts. I would say he had a positive mental attitude. I would say he was a very courageous man. And Jonathan said, the Lord has delivered them into our hands. And both of the men discovered or showed themselves to the garrison of the Philistines. And the Philistines said, behold, that he will come forth out of the holes where they have hid themselves. And the man of the garrison answered Jonathan and his armor bearer and said, come up unto us and we'll show you a thing. We're going to teach you a lesson, is what they're telling him. You come up, you guys who've been hiding in the rocks and the holes. Come on up here. We're going to teach you a lesson. And Jonathan said to the armor bearer, come up after me, for the Lord has delivered them unto us. So here we are. Two men facing the whole army of the Philistines. And they had some guts. They had some courage. They had the gall to say that God had delivered them, delivered the enemy into their hands. And it said Jonathan crawled up onto his feet and his hands as fast as he could go. And it was a steep hill. And he climbed up this hill as fast as he could. Hands and feet climbing up the hill. And the armor bearer came after him, and they fell before Jonathan, armor bearer, and slew them. And it says the first wave was about 20 men in an acre of land that oxen might plow. In other words, the first 20 Philistines that came upon Jonathan with a sword slew them all in about an acre of land. What happened then was that the King Saul, that is, who was standing there, terrified, he suddenly got some courage. Because someone had decided to stand up in the face of the oppression of the Philistines. They got some courage. And then some others got some courage. Today we are faced with a problem, and America needs men and women of courage, just like Jonathan in that ancient battle that I just described. We all recognize that we need to be more courageous than we have been in the past. We all need to be more dedicated than we've had been in the past. And we need a greater sense of honor than we've had in the past. We also need to have a greater sense of duty than we've had in the past. We have to have the right attitude. We have to recognize what the problem is. We have to have the right goal firmly established in our hearts. It's not enough just knowing. In other words, not in the knowing, but it is in the doing that is going to bring us victory. It's like those two little ants at the golf course. And the golfer, he put the little golf ball down on the golf tee. And standing right next to the golf tee are two ants. And the golfer swings and he misses the golf ball. And he swings again. And the golf club almost kills the two little ants. They jump out of the way. Then he swings the third time. It almost kills the two ants again. Three times he swung. Three times he missed the ball. And each time he almost killed the ants. Finally, the one ant says to the other ant, "Listen, if we are going to survive, we better get on the ball." Well, that's kind of a silly story, I know. Our nation, our people, those of us who truly care about our future and the future of our children, we better get on the ball. If we are going to survive, then our people had better get on the ball. Now today, we have come out of Hollywood, or we see coming out of Hollywood, as you all are well aware, the Hollywood version of the Ku Klux Klan. Now supposedly, I'm sure you've seen them, some people sitting at home watching TV say, "Well, if I join the Klan, I guess I've got to act like those people on TV." And so they think they have to be obnoxious. They think they've got to drink a lot of beer and cuss a lot. And they tempt them to live up to the stereotype of the TV Klansmen or these morons you see on the shows like Jerry Springer. Well, that's how Hollywood and TV has presented us. We're not looking for people like that. We're looking for people with honor and courage, people with a sense of duty, people who to recognize that to win and conquer for our people, we have to first take control of our own lives and be better people for the sake of our children and our nation. The Bible says that it's easier to rule a city or nation than it is to rule our own lives. You see, it's easy to sit back and say, "Well, we should do this, or that we should do this, or we should have done that." But we need to work out our own lives to polish ourselves to be an instrument for God and His people and for our children. It's easy to sit and rule a city and tell other people what to do. It's harder to tell yourself what to do than obey what you know is best. Someone that God can count on, that is. So it's important that we as individuals try to have self-discipline and to have dignity and integrity and honor. If we want to be a good patriot or a good Klansman or a good American, then let's try to live up to all of those ideals that we claim to support and love so dearly. There are many examples of people in the past who have lived up to these ideals. One such example I'm going to give is a story about the Roman soldier that lived in the city of Pompeii. And this is a true story, the best that we can recollect. A Roman soldier was given an order to stand duty and stand guard at the gates of the city. And there the Roman soldier stood as he was ordered. Well, evidently a few minutes after, a short time later, that peaceful city of Pompeii was interrupted by a violent volcano, and people started to flee the city of Pompeii. No doubt parents were looking for their children, and children running and searching for their parents. People ran in terror, and everywhere they looked for a way to get out. A few years back, when they dug up the city of Pompeii, you know what they found? The Roman soldier was still at his gate, still at his post. He didn't run. He stood his duty. Do we know what duty is today? Sometimes I wonder if we even know what duty is all about. That Roman soldier, 19 centuries ago, knew what duty was. In 1834, 35, 186 men stood on the walls of the Alamo. And they stood against the army of Santa Anna. Thousands and thousands of Mexican soldiers bearing down on the little fort, increasing every day and swelling in numbers. There, the 186 men stood. Will Travis took a sword and he drew a line in the dirt. And I'm sure you have all heard the story. He took the sword, drew the line, and he said to those men, "If any of you want to leave now, this is the time. There is still time to escape. Do it now, and it will not be held against you. But those of you who want to fight for Texas, step across the line." And 186 men, knowing or certainly were aware that it could mean their death, stood and stepped across that line in that Texas dust of many years ago at that little mission, the Alamo. That's duty. That's courage. That is knowing a sense of honor. In 1776, July 4th, 56 men signed their name on a piece of paper. We know it today as the Declaration of Independence. There were no British troops outside. They were not faced with the legions of Santa Anna's army. But it took courage. 56 men signed their name on the Declaration of Independence, knowing full well that they had just committed treason against the British government. They were traitors. And today, if we had lost that war, you would be reading about the traitor, George Washington. The traitor, Patrick Henry. The traitor, Thomas Jefferson. The traitor, James Madison. Instead of the hero, George Washington, or the hero, Thomas Jefferson. Benjamin Franklin, George Washington, were written up in the British press as scoundrels, thieves, liars, other horrible descriptions. But they signed their name, pledging their lives, their fortune, and their sacred honor. That took courage. Many people fail to recognize the courage it took to sign that document. Of the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence, 5 were captured by the British as traitors and tortured before they died. 12 had their home ransacked and burned. 2 lost their sons in the Revolutionary War. Another had 2 sons captured. And all of them faced the gallows. What kind of men were they? 24 were lawyers and jurists. 11 were merchants. 9 were farmers. They were soft-spoken men of means and education. They had security, but they valued liberty more. Standing tall and straight and unwavering, they pledged, for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. Others suffered similar fates and faced hardships and poverty also. But they did it all for the future generations that would come. They did it for us. They risked so much. They had a duty to perform. They had a destiny to accomplish. Today, we are facing the same problem. We have to recognize, and I hope that you recognize, that the solution does not lie in night riding and beating up people. Our solution does not lie in any of these so-called acts of terrorism that the media likes to try to claim the Klan is doing. The solution lies in only one thing, and that is when we achieve political power in this country. Our solution lies in the fact that we have to recognize right now, in our own minds, a proper attitude. We no longer have any allegiance to the Republican and Democratic parties or the politicians that now rule in Washington, D.C. They have committed treason against our people. The question is, are we going to commit treason against our people, or are we going to say no to the tyrants who rule over us? Or are we going to have a positive mental attitude and know that God will give us the courage? We just dedicate ourselves and stand in defense of God and nation. Will you place your trust in God to guide us through to our destiny? To stand up for our nation, to have the courage that our ancestors had? And to ignite that feeling of duty and dedication in others that they might find the courage to stand with us? Who will be inspired by our sense of duty? Who will be inspired by our sense of honor? We don't know. Are we going to inspire them, or are we going to be slothful and neglect our duty? That is the answer that you will have to face, that all of us will have to face. Will we fulfill our duties? If we have not done all we can do for our race today, if you have not done all that you can do for your race, for your children, for your nation, for your homeland, your faith, so that they will not face a hopeless tomorrow, then I beg you to ask for their forgiveness. It is our duty to protect them and to protect their future. Our people have sinned against Jesus Christ. Our people have sinned against our nation. And our people have sinned against our children. Because we have not had the courage to defy the enemy that now rules over us. Each and every one of us can have more courage. Each and every one of us. Each and every one of us can have a greater sense of duty. The same blood that flows through our veins also flowed through the hearts of our ancestors who stood for our nation. The same blood that flowed through the veins of those 56 men who signed the Declaration of Independence, or the 186 men who died at the Alamo. It's the same blood. We're the same people. We can have that same courage, that same honor. We can develop it. It is there if we will. It is there if we will to be so. God can help us to have more of these things, to have more honor, courage, and dedication. We must strive to achieve these things. Our nation and our children depend on it. We cannot betray the trust of our children. Thank you very much.